चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मूकं करोति वाचलं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपतमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारणं परमानन्दमाधवम् हे कृष्णकरणसिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपीशा गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते ताप्तकञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुतिदेवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वञ्चकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So I thank all of you for coming out this evening, although today is a Maharashtrian holiday, but still you were very enthusiastic to come. So first of all, I would like to explain a little bit about our bhajan program this evening. A philosopher once said that east is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet. So this saying is very famous, but most people concentrate on the first part, emphasizing the differences. But the second part of the saying is that ere they do, ne'er again to part. In other words, the culture of the East, the psychophysical nature of Easterners is different, and the culture and psychophysical nature of Westerners is quite different, actually. I have been in India now almost 18 years, and I can testify to that. I haven't changed, and neither have the Indians. But one thing that was introduced by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada is to combine the two cultures in Krishna consciousness. My Guru Maharaj used to say that India is poverty-stricken and America is affluence-stricken. So he gave the simile of a blind man and a lame man. A blind man cannot move because he can't see his way. And a lame man can see his way, but his legs are broken, he cannot move. But if they cooperate together, if the crippled man climbs on the back of the blind man, then he can act as the eyes. The blind man's legs can move very nicely, and together they can make their way. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to bring together the East and the West for the benefit of the whole world. Especially in the modern days, we see that Easterners are very wont to imitate the worst qualities of Western culture, such as illicit sex, the sexual habits of Westerners, freely mixing, and no social shame or rules or regulations. Increase of so many unnecessary material amenities, and using all one's intelligence and energy to increase material desires. Now I see they have in India MS, a lady's choice, a lady's privilege, a lady's cigarette now, especially for ladies. So this is progress. So Srila Prabhupada's genius was to encourage Westerners to take up Krishna consciousness by dovetailing their previous activities, such as playing guitar. Titikshava Prabhu was formerly a songwriter, and he was a budding Michael Jackson. I think tomorrow night are the Grammy Awards, right? 10:30. It's on the newspaper. So many people in India will be watching the Grammy Awards to see who is the best rock musician, whether it is, I don't know who it is these days, Prince or Michael Jackson or somebody. So Titikshava Prabhu, before he became a devotee, was in that line. So having come to Krishna consciousness, it is not that he has denied his talent, but he has simply used the same talent in the service of Lord Krishna. And that is bhakti yoga. So he's has sung some very nice songs for us this evening, and not tomorrow night, but the night after he'll again come for some more bhajan. So I thank him for that. So this evening, as I said yesterday, we're going to chant the Ishopanishad mantras. I've given you all a sheet. So we're going to start from the invocation mantra. Then we're going to do from mantra 1 up to mantra 8. So mantra 8 will be the most difficult, because I don't know a very good tune. But at least the first 7 we can try, and I'll struggle through 8. Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam. Purnat Purnam Udachate. Purnasya Purnamadaya. Purnameva Vashishyate. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Yat kincha jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktena bunjita. Magrada kashasvidhanam. Kurvane veha karmani. Jijivishekshatam samaha. Evam tvai nanyate tosti. Na karma lipyate nare. Asurya namate loka. Andena tamasavritaha. Tangste pritya bigachanti. Yeke chatmano janaha. Anejadikam manaso javiyo. Naina deva apnuvam purvam arshat. Tadavato jnana tyeti tishtat. Tasmina po matri svadadati. Tad ejati tannaijati. Tad dure tad vantike. Tad antarasya sarvasya. Tadu sarvasyasya bayataha. यस्तु सर्वाणि भूतानि आत्मन्येवानुपश्यति सर्वभूतेषु चात्मानम् ततो न विजगुप्सते यस्मिन् सर्वाणि भूतानि आत्मैवाभूद्विजानतः तत्र को मोहाकाशुका एकत्वम् अनुपश्यतः सफार्यजाक्षुक्रम् अखायमव्रणम् अश्नाविरम् शुदमपापविदम् कवीर्मनीषी परिभू स्वयंभू यथाथत्यतो रथान् व्यददाच्चास्पृथिव्यः समाभ्यः Last one's a tough one. So yesterday we read the invocation mantra and the first three mantras of Sri Ishvarupanishad, and we discussed how the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, Purnam, and how all emanations from Him, such as this phenomenal world, are also perfectly equipped as complete wholes. There is a complete arrangement within this material world for the living beings to realize the complete whole. We discussed how Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate, that even though so many complete units are emanating from Him, He remains undiminished. He remains the complete balance. We discussed spiritual arithmetic. 1 - 1 = 1. Then we discussed how the Lord is the proprietor of everything. Everything animate and inanimate belongs to Him. We are simply temporary lessees, and that this is a very important peace formula. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyapamam shantim richati. One who can understand that Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer, he attains to lasting peace. Gyapamam, one who understands this, shantim richati. We also discussed how if one desires, he can go on living for hundreds of years by performing karma as ordained in the shastras. Actually, in this Kali Yuga, people live a very short duration of life. That is ordained by Kali Yuga. But one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga is that we live a very unregulated, highly unorthodox life, very whimsical, based upon impulse. We eat, sleep, mate, and defend with no regulation, worse than animals. And therefore, naturally, the machine of this body doesn't last very long, just like if you have a car. If you don't take regular care of it, if you don't have it serviced regularly, then naturally it won't last very long. And then lastly, in Mantra 3, we discussed briefly Atmahana, killer of the soul. And I made the comment that in the Ishvarupanishad, there are many seeming contradictions. And I hinted how further contradictions would be introduced in today's verses. Here is one contradiction, that the soul is eternal, but the very term Atmahana means killer of the soul. So the explanation is that, just like a miser, if a man has $1 million and he doesn't spend it on anything, then what is the value of his money? Literally, he's a poor man. He has 1 million pieces of paper, but money is spent, meant to be exchanged for various commodities so that one can enjoy his life. Or another example is that if a man, perhaps an aborigine, if he's wandering through the forest and he comes across some treasure chest with $1 million in it, but because he's an aborigine, he doesn't know what money is. He doesn't know that the government has issued this money and will exchange it for gold, supposedly. So this aborigine, tribal, because he doesn't know what money is, he doesn't know that this money has been issued on the order of the government, he's still a poor man, even though he has a treasure chest. So in the same way, someone who gets this human form of life and doesn't use it for self-realization, but simply uses it for imitating the animals in the business of ahar, nidra, vay, maithun, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he is atmahana. Effectively, he has covered his soul with ignorance. Therefore, he's described as atmahana. So today we'll start verse 4. Anedadekam manaso javiyo naina devapnuvam purvamashat taddavato jnanatyeti tishtat tasminupo matrishva dadati. The personality of Godhead, although fixed in his abode, is more swift than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he has control over those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. So yesterday we emphasized how the Sri Ishopanishad is the best evidence from the Upanishads that ultimately the absolute truth is personal. One gentleman expressed some doubt along those lines, but now we will see how, although Krishna, the Godhead, is described as nirguna, with having no qualities, but he is described in other places having no arms, no legs, no mouth, etc. But here in these verses, it is described how he actually runs faster than all others. So the real meaning of Krishna's having no legs, or God's having no legs, is that he has no material legs as we know them. But he is sentient. Here in the verse number 4, anejad ekam means that he is fixed in one place. Anejadekam means fixed in one place or fixed in his abode. But manaso javiyo. Javiyo means that he is swifter than the mind. He is more swift than the mind, although he's fixed in one place. So again, here's our first contradiction. Generally, when people talk about God, if you ask someone, what do you think about God? What are your ideas on God? We find that people are not very clear in their thoughts. Although they talk about God and the kingdom of God, especially in Western countries, every day in school, we used to say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we used to talk about heaven and the kingdom of God, and after leaving this body, that we would go to the kingdom of God. But it wasn't very clear what was the kingdom of God, where it was, what was over there, were there any palaces, how many people were there. Very naturally, when you talk about the kingdom of God, there must be subjects, there must be buildings, there must be so many things. You can't have a kingdom of God that is void. It's a ludicrous statement. So here we see Krishna talks about his abode. And in the Bhagavad Gita also, Arjuna says in the 11th chapter, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, that you are the supreme Brahman. Everybody has heard this term, Brahman, meaning spirit. But we should understand that Brahman indicates the Sat feature of the Absolute Truth. But there is the Chit and Ananda potency. Within Brahman, there is variety. And within Brahman, there is Param Brahman or Param Brahma. So Arjuna is telling Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they're standing there, Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. It's a place, it's a Dharmakshetra. It's not an allegory. Kurukshetra is a place. You can go from Delhi on the train, get down in Kurukshetra, and every year they have so many festivals there. So 5,000 years ago, Krishna was there on the battlefield, and Arjuna said to him, Param Brahma, I understand that you are the supreme Brahman. And your abode, Param Dhamma, is the supreme abode, supreme kingdom. Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, you are the supreme pure. And your nature is the highest nature. Purusham Shaspatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. So, here it is explained that this supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality, who is swifter than the mind, he is aspired after by so many personalities. In this world, when one becomes completely frustrated with trying to enjoy sense gratification in the material world, then he thinks about spiritual life. As long as one is interested in indriya tripti, indriya sukh, chapala sukh, flickering sense enjoyment, he will not have the determination, vyavasayatmika buddhi, which is required to make progress in real spiritual life. Of course, if you want some cheating process, if you want something to flatter your false ego, to increase your prestige, then you can be a visitor to this church or that temple and meet your friends and show them how religious you are. My Guru Maharaj used to call such persons Dharma Dvajis, that they, you know, they have a flag, a dvaj, and they wave their flag of Dharma. Just see, I'm very religious. But such Dharma Dvajis are not very much appreciated by Lord Krishna. In fact, he doesn't pay any attention to them at all. The real spiritual seeker, he comes to search after Krishna with all his body, mind, and words. He seriously takes up the pursuit of the Absolute Truth. But in the beginning stages, without having contact with a bona fide spiritual master coming in disciplic succession, he may go on different paths. He may go on the path of speculative knowledge, jnana, or on the path of karma, or on the path of yoga. And he may even proceed lifetime after lifetime. And he may be elevated from the human form of life. There are other forms of life. on other planets. In fact, on every planet in the universe, there is life. This may surprise some of you, but according to Shastra, Nitya Sarvagatha Stanur, the soul is existing everywhere. If you look in the earth, you will find so many living beings. If you look in the air, you will find so many living beings, millions of living beings, different species even. If you look in the water, you'll find so many living beings. Everywhere there is life in a different form. Those who live in the water cannot live on the land. And similarly, those who live on the land cannot live in the air. They have different bodies adapted to the different environment. But the soul is existing everywhere. And there are higher planets and lower planets. Although human beings are very proud and puffed up that they are the highest, but actually beyond this earthly planet, there are heavenly planets where the devatas are living. So someone in pursuit of a pious life or a godly life, he may be elevated to the heavenly planets. But until he takes complete shelter in loving devotion at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, until he surrenders fully, he cannot understand Krishna. And that is explained here, Nainad Deva Apnuvam Purvam Arshat, that even the devas, they cannot move, they cannot approach Apnuvan Purvam. Purvam means in front of, and Apnuvan means approach. They cannot approach the Lord because they don't have the qualifications. And I'll just relate one story. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was preaching in South India, he came across some followers of another sampradaya. So this is an example of how even in the line of worshiping Krishna, there are different degrees and different stages. But until one comes to prema bhakti, he hasn't reached the ultimate or final goal. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met one of the followers, and that follower was insisting that the worship of Lakshmi Narayan is the supreme form of worship. Lakshmi Narayan are worshipped in the mood of awe and reverence, that God is great. This is one thing that everyone will say all over the world, the Christians, the Hindus, the Muslims, everyone will admit that God is great. So that's a very beginning stage of appreciation of Godhead. To admit, to acknowledge that he is the greatest. Brahman means the greatest. So, this person was espousing this idea that the worship of Lakshmi Narayan is supreme. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out to him that when Lord Krishna was engaged in his rasa dance, that Lakshmiji became very, very curious about the dealings between Krishna and his gopis. So this was an indication. Lakshmi, of course, is always worshipping the lotus feet of Vishnu, but she became curious about something else. So this was one indication that there was something that was attracting her. And then the second thing was that she requested permission to enter into the rasa dance to see what it was like to actually experience the rasa dance, rasa-lila. But because her mood of serving God was in awe and reverence, she was not permitted to enter into the rasa dance. So of course this is all in the line of devotional service. This is all transcendental. But I've simply related this story to show you how many different levels or degrees there are in the spiritual pursuit. What to speak of in the material realm, where we haven't even attained to mukti, but even after mukti, there are so many different degrees of appreciating the absolute truth. So those on the higher planetary systems, even the demigods who are Matrisva Dadati, who are controlling the wind and the rain and the sun and the stars and the moon and so many things they're controlling in the universe. And in fact, they are like the ministers of the government. Krishna's like the prime minister, and the demigods are like ministers in charge of different portfolios. The finance minister is Kubera. The waterworks minister will be Indra. And Kartikeya is the minister of defense. And like that, there are so many different demigods in charge of different functions. But the prime minister, to whom they pay all of their homage, from whom they get all of their power, that is Lord Krishna. So in this verse, it is explaining that Lord Krishna is swifter than the mind. So just try to understand how swift is the speed of mind. I'm sitting here, I'm standing here in Bombay, and I may be thinking, all of a sudden I may think about my house in Canada. So immediately I'm there. How swift is the mind? So the mind speed is very fast. But Lord Krishna, although he's fixed in one place, he can move faster than anyone. So he's not impersonal. Mantra 5, tad ejati tan nayajati tad dure tad vantike tad antarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya syabhayata. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he's very near as well. He is within everything, and again, he is outside of everything. So, here again, he walks and he doesn't walk. So if he walks, of course, if you say he has no legs, then you can say he doesn't walk. But if you say he walks, then he must have legs to walk. Walking means with legs. So again, the contradiction is solved by understanding that Krishna's arms, Krishna's legs, Krishna's face, Krishna's lips, everything about Krishna is sentient, but they are not ordinary. In fact, in the Brahma Sangita, it is stated, Angani yasya shakalendriya vrittimanti pasyanti panti kalayam chirayam jaganti ananda chinmaya sadujvala vigrahasya govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. All of the limbs of Krishna, all of the senses of Krishna are interchangeable. This is just a hint about the form of God. Krishna can eat with his eyes. When we offer a thali to Krishna and then we go to the thali after half an hour, someone may say, oh, Krishna wasn't hungry today, he didn't eat, everything's still there. Because when we think of eating, we think of putting it in our mouth, and then there's nothing left on the plate. But Krishna can eat by seeing. Krishna can eat by smelling. Krishna can eat by hearing the prayers of the devotees, offering the food. He's not limited in any way. His senses are all interchangeable. So this is very wonderful. This is something that we have no experience of. He's very near, and yet vantike, tadure, he's very far away as well. Vantike means that he's very near, but dure means that he's very far away. Then the explanation is given, tad antarasya. He's within everything. He's within every atom. Andantarastha Paramanu Chayantarastam, he's within Paramanu. Even in the Vedic scriptures, there is knowledge of the atom. It is not that it was discovered by modern science. There's a complete description of atom and time, and so many physical laws are explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in other portions of the Vedic literatures. In fact, the scientists would do well to read Srimad Bhagavatam. They would get a lot of knowledge to understand many things which are puzzling them today. The Vedic scriptures are delivering perfect knowledge. So anyway, here it is explained, tad antarasya sarvasya tad usarvasya asya bhayata. He's bhayata, he's also outside of everything. So how is this possible that he can be inside everything and at the same time outside of everything? It doesn't make sense when we think about it in a normal way. So the fact is that Krishna is achintya. He is inconceivable. Just like, for example, a very famous frog who went to Bombay University and got his PhD, Dr. Frog. He got a degree, he became a professor of philosophy. So he was living in his well after graduation along with his wife and children and brother-in-laws and friends and living in his well. So one day, his brother became very adventuresome and said, I think I'm going to go traveling for summer vacation. I think I'm going to leave the well and go traveling. So Dr. Frog, PhD, gave him blessings, and Professor Frog's wife cooked some nice chapatis and dry sabji for him, and he went traveling. So he came back about 3 months later, and he met everybody, and then he met Professor Frog, and he began to describe his travels, and he said that, you won't believe this, but I came to a huge body of water. They call it the ocean. It's unfathomable. It's so large, you just can't imagine. So Professor Frog was a little flustered because he thought that his well was all there was. He wasn't sure of any other bodies of water. Maybe there was another well somewhere, but so he began to ask, is it twice as big as my well? And his brother said, no, you can't understand, it's huge. Said, is it three times as big as my well? No, it's just unlimited. In that way, Professor Frog, PhD, was trying to understand that which was beyond the purview of his senses. As we've discussed many times, those living in this material world are subject to four defects. I'm sure you all remember them. We have imperfect senses. We make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. To err is human. But to insist that those mistakes are perfect, that is foolish. But still, even though our senses are imperfect, limited, even though we make mistakes, still people concoct philosophies and try to proliferate their invented ideas, their concocted ideas, and convince others that it is the truth. So this is called the cheating propensity. We have imperfect senses, we make mistakes, we have a cheating propensity, and we are in illusion that I am this body. So anyone with these four defects, he cannot understand the absolute truth by such empirical speculation, empirical approach. So these contradictions of how Krishna is within everything and how he is outside of everything, it can be understood, but one must understand it by the agency of a bona fide spiritual master who is a representative of Krishna, who has received this knowledge through disciplic succession. Just like there are three kinds of evidence, Vedic evidence: pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda. These are three kinds of praman. So the direct pratyaksha, direct process, we have already discussed why it is defective. Then there is induction. One creates a hypothesis. It may be like this, it may be like that. But that process is also defective because it is based upon speculation. There's no guarantee that such a process will lead you to the truth. And then there's Shruti Praman. For example, the Vedic literatures. Why do we accept the authority of Vedic literatures? Because the Vedic literatures are coming down through disciplic succession from Krishna. Just like we understand who our father is on the evidence of our mother. It is the only valid evidence, because the mother knows who the father is. Sometimes there's a doubt in the modern days. So you have to rely on the mother. So in the same way, the Vedas are considered to be the mother. They are delivered by great sages and saints whose mind and senses were controlled. So it is anavriti shabdat. You can, this in the Vedanta Sutra, it is stated anavriti. Anavriti means just like one gets out of jail. If he's in jail and he can free himself, that is called anavriti. Shabdat, by sound. So this Shruti Praman is the best type of evidence. For example, when you look at the sun directly, you may conclude that it is no bigger than a rupee coin. But if you read or hear from an authority, a physicist or an astronaut or whatever, you can understand that it's far larger than this planet. So that's an example of hearing from authority and getting the correct knowledge. So similarly, tad ejati, tad naijati, tad dure, tad vantike, tad antarasya sarvasya, tadu sarvasya shabhayata. This is all possible because Krishna is a chintya. If you accept the inconceivable potencies of God, then you can understand how He's existing within everything, and at the same time, anejadekam. He's fixed in His abode. He's a person, a transcendental person. Just like you and I are persons, Krishna is param brahma. This becomes possible if you accept the inconceivable potencies. Mantra 6. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani evanupasyati. Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato na vijagupsate. A person who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and sees all entities as His parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, he never hates anything nor any being. So here, it is very interesting to note that this word atmani means seeing everything. Anupasyati means seeing. Actually, it doesn't mean ordinary seeing. The other day, someone was talking about why he could not understand what Krishna understands. And I tried to explain that Krishna's way of understanding is far more profound, far more developed than we can imagine in our very small position. So in the same way, this seeing means not just like you see a movie or, you know, see by hearing. Just like if I give you a description of Moscow, even though you may not have seen Moscow, but you can understand it. So there's different ways of seeing. And here it is described that we should try to see things, everything, in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, that is
In Sanskrit, that is called Shastra Chakshus, seeing through the eyes of Scripture, because the Scriptures are giving an accurate description which is coming from God, Sakshad, Hari. It's coming directly from the Dharmam Tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. This is the real meaning of seeing, is to get knowledge of something from God. His knowledge is perfect. So here it is explaining that this vision of seeing all living beings as related to God, seeing everything as the property of God, seeing everything as controlled by God, this vision is essential for someone who wants to become free from anxiety, someone who wants to become free from death, someone who wants to become a lover of all. There's a very popular movement that everyone should try to learn to love their brothers and sisters. People talk about brotherhood of man. But the same people who talk about brotherhood of man, they have no qualms about mercilessly slaughtering innocent animals to satisfy their palate without any consideration. They completely exploit the innocent animals, and they talk about universal vision and universal brotherhood. But one can only learn about the real spiritual, the real universal vision, when one considers the origin of everything. Yasmin vigyatam sarvam evam vigyatam bhavanti. By simply coming to this point, the central point of Krishna, one can develop perfect vision of everything in relationship to Krishna. Without this central point, there's no question of universality, there's no question of unity, there's no question of brotherhood of man. Until you recognize the common father, where's the question of talking of one another as being brothers? And all of the praja deserve our respect, including the innocent animals. So the seeing in a systematic way, everything in relationship to God, such a person never hates anything nor any being, because he sees everything. He sees within everyone, Pandita Samadarshina. He sees within the body of every living being is the soul. How to see the soul? Vidyavinaya sampane brahmane gavi hastini sunichayava svapake cha pandita samadarshina. So how to develop that vision is being explained here in the Ishopanishad. Mantra 7. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaeva bhud vijanataha tatra ko mahakasha ekatvam anupashyataha. One who always sees all living beings as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What is there as illusion or anxiety for him? So, hear the word vijanataha. One who knows that all living beings are parts of God. Again, this is a sequel, a follow-up to the previous verse. These two verses are actually a very good description of a Mahabhagavat, a Siddha Purush, a self-realized soul. Because basically there are three categories of devotees. There's the Kanishta Adhikari, the Madhyam Adhikari, and the Uttam Adhikari. So the characteristic of a Kanishta Adhikari, he's a neophyte, a beginner. And his vision is that God is in my temple, God is in my church, God is in my mosque, and he's not in anybody else's mosque or church or temple. And this neophyte is not very convicted in the science of God consciousness. He may know a little bit about the Leela of God. We find in India many people know a little bit about Krishna Leela or Shiva Leela or whatever. They may have some demigod that they worship also. So they know a little bit about the stories. But the science of God, they don't know. So therefore, they become sometimes fanatical. Sometimes they cause violence in the name of religion. And sometimes they fall away also. They get distracted. They're very easily distracted because they're not fixed in the philosophy. Being on the mental platform is not a fixed platform because the mind is changing. The mind is always changing and one can be distracted. Today you may be this and tomorrow you may change your mind and become that. We see oftentimes someone becomes a Christian, then he changes his mind, becomes a Hindu, next day changes his mind and becomes a Muslim. Then after that, he becomes an atheist, then a communist. In that way, he may change his mind so many times. So this is not knowledge. This is not on the platform of intelligence. The platform of intelligence is fixed. So a Kanishtha Adhikari, he has no philosophical understanding. The Madhyam Adhikari, who is more advanced than the neophyte Kanishtha, he's in the middle, Madhyam. He makes a discrimination between different persons in this world. The Madhyam Adhikari sees the Lord as his supreme lovable object. He has a little philosophical understanding and he's very fixed in his dedication. And he sees the Lord and worships the Lord. He sees the devotees of the Lord and he tries to make friends with them. He tries to associate with them. He gives up the association of non-devotees because he knows that that association will interfere with his own spiritual life. Asat sanga tyaga e vaishnavachar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was asked, who is a devotee of God? And that was his answer. A devotee of God is someone who gives up the association of non-devotees who will pollute his consciousness. So he makes friends with the devotees in his social life, in his spiritual life, everything he centers around his devotional service. Then he sees the innocent people who are simply beguiled by foolish politicians, by Madison Avenue marketers, you know, people who are not interested, they're simply interested in selling so many material products, and the innocent people get brainwashed by all this mass marketing of so many goods, and they become caught up. If I don't have a Will cigarette, then I can't be happy in life. If I don't have a color television, if I don't have this, and they waste their life, human life, chasing after so many useless things which are not at all necessary for a peaceful and happy life, but they're innocent and they're foolish. So the devotee of the Lord, he takes compassion upon them and he tries to preach to them. And then the last category he sees are the asura, the non-devotees, who are actually envious of God. And literally they want to kill Krishna, either grossly or subtly. Grossly we see that Ravan or Hiranyakashipu, they were literally attempting to kill God directly. Kansa, Shishupal, Dantavakra, there are so many demons discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But in a subtle way also, we see that many people try to kill Krishna by denying his existence, by saying he has no arms, He has no legs. He has no face. He has no eyes or feet. They're trying to kill him, to deny him. So that is demoniac. And the madhyamadhikari, he avoids such persons. Because, like they say in the Bible, don't cast your pearls to swine. Don't give rubies and diamonds to pigs, hogs. They have no value of it. So, such a madhyamadhikari, he makes progress in that way. And then there's the uttam adhikari. The uttam adhikari, he sees the soul everywhere, as I explained. Nitya sarvagata stanur. He sees the soul within every living being. He sees Paramatma within every atom, and he's totally undisturbed. So this is a description of such an uttam adhikari. Here it talks about ekatvam anupasyataha. Ekatvam again, in this sense, means that he sees the oneness in purpose with God. Not that as the impersonalists say, that the soul after liberation merges into Brahman. No, that is not ekatvam talked about here. The ekatvam talked about here is just like in a family. There is oneness between the father and his sons. Oneness in purpose. Or in the country, they talk about, you know, a national integration. National oneness. Everyone realizes that if we work together, then we can do very nice things for the whole country and for each and every one of us individually. So in the same way, we have to work together in oneness with God. Not that we become God, but we have to be one in purpose. So that is the proper explanation. And the last verse, verse number 8, Saparyajak chukramakayam avrinam ashnaviram sudamapapavidam kavirmanishi paribhu swayambhur yathatatitoratan vyadadashyaspatibhyasamabhyaha. Such a person must know, in fact, the greatest of all, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminate, the self-sufficient philosopher who is awarding everyone's desire since time immemorial. So it is imperative that one should know from the right source the personality of Godhead. Saparyajak. One must know it in fact, not speculation, but in fact. He must understand the nature of Krishna. Krishna is Shukram. He is omnipotent. He is full of all potencies. Therefore, he is a person because he has all potencies. Therefore, we can understand it is proof that Krishna is a person. Now again, this word akayam. Akayam means unembodied. So immediately people will say, just see, Krishna has no body. You've been talking about Krishna's body as he's Keshava, he has beautiful long hair, he's playing on a flute, he's tribhanga, threefold bending form, dancing with gopis. But here it says akayam, he's unembodied. But this unembodied doesn't mean in the sense of not having a body. Again, it means that he has no material body. Just like, for example, in the material world, there are different categories of everything. For example, there are fruits and vegetables and grains and milk products. These are all different categories of food. So sometimes you find in a particular category there is something which doesn't seem like it belongs to that category. For example, avocados. Has everyone heard of, do you know what an avocado is? It's, I don't know what they call it in Hindi. It's actually a fruit, but it tastes just like a vegetable. It looks like a vegetable. Or tomatoes. You all know what tomatoes are. So everybody, what do you think? What is a tomato? Do you know what a tomato is? Most people would say it's a vegetable, but it's a fruit. Scientifically, a tomato is more of a fruit than it is a vegetable. So it's actually, because it's out of its category, it's very hard for us to understand it. Or, for example, say, cats. Now, generally when you think of a cat, if I ask you, can I bring my cat to your house? And you say, okay. You know, you think of a small, little four-legged, furry animal that purrs very nicely. But if I show up with a tiger, you'll be very surprised. But a tiger is also a cat. But in the category of cat, he seems out of place. So similarly, unembodied means that Krishna doesn't have a body as we know. The category of bodies that we are understanding, Krishna's body is not like that. Therefore, the Vedas describe him as unembodied. But in another place, it says that he walks, he talks, he dances, he does so many things. Therefore, we have to understand, not taking simply a one-sided approach. The Vaishnavas, we accept that Krishna has both. In fact, for Krishna, it is stated, natasya kayam karanam cha vidyate, natat samascha vyadikascha drishyate, parasya shaktir vividaiva shruyate, svabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. Krishna, personally, he has nothing to do. Natasya kayam karanam cha vidyate. But even though he has no work that binds him, we have to work. If you don't work, then you can't get your roti, kapra, and makan. You have to work. But Krishna, he has no work at all to do. He simply enjoys. Actually, we are also meant for simply enjoying. There's actually no need to work. That may seem surprising, revolutionary, and against the government ethic that work is worship. But the fact is that, as I said yesterday, there's an arrangement for everyone in nature. God's plan is there. Every grain of rice has someone's name written on it. There, as Mahatma Gandhi used to say, God has created enough for man's need, but not enough for man's greed. So if we shared everything as we're supposed to do, magrada kasya sviddhanam, if we didn't usurp others' wealth, but just took our own quota, tyaktena, our quota, which is set aside by the Lord, we could live very peacefully and happily and have abundant supply, kamaduk. But because we transgress the laws of God, therefore we're in difficulty. So anyway, Krishna, although he has nothing to do, actually he's doing everything. We are not the doer in any activity. Krishna is the ultimate doer, the supreme doer. Again, here's another contradiction. But the way Krishna does it is through his multifarious energies, parasya shakti. Just like a practical example, in our temple, we have kind of reorganized our management structure because we realized that we wanted to grow. We wanted to expand the glories of Lord Krishna all over Bombay, all over India, and all over the world. So the present system which we were operating under was not as conducive as the new system that we have evolved, which is more of a kind of corporate system where we have a president and underneath him four vice presidents. So some of the devotees who were officers in the old system, they were accustomed to what is known as hands-on management. I don't know if you've heard that term before, but it means that someone gives me work to do, Say someone tells me, go to the store or bring me some milk. So I put on my shoes and I go out to the store and I pay the money and I bring the milk. I do it myself personally. Or managing means that supposing I'm in charge of finances and 10 people need money, so I personally keep the cash in my drawer and they come to me and I personally give them the money. That's called hands-on management. So that type of system is not very good because it doesn't engage others and it doesn't train people. Just like if I were in charge of the cash and then one day I was sick, who would dispense the cash? No one else was trained. So in the corporate world, they have much more delegation of authority. Those companies which actually grow very large, they have a system where they delegate authority. So some of the people in the old system, the hands-on management, they became bewildered that, you know, what will I do? If I don't, you know, hand out the cash and physically do the work, then, you know, what will be my engagement? I'll just sleep all day. But actually, they don't understand that their duty is to do so many things, but through the agency, through the energy of others. That's also called lazy intelligence. There's four kinds of intelligence or four kinds of action. There's active foolish. He's very dangerous person. Then there's lazy foolish. Active foolish, he's a madman who goes around causing trouble to everyone. Lazy foolish is someone who's crazy, but he stays at home. He doesn't get in your way. And then active intelligent is this hands-on manager. He's intelligent, he knows how to do, but he never seems to have enough hands. There's always more work than he has time. And he always does things a little bit imperfectly. And then there's lazy intelligent. Just like there's a story about, there was a joke about going to the moon. So they were proposing sending different people to the moon. Different Indians were going to get tickets to go to the moon. So before they sent the spaceship up to the moon, they began inquiring from different people to see how much they would have to pay them and what they would do with the money they got and everything. So they asked different people. They asked, you know, a Gujarati how much money he wanted, and he said he wanted 5,000 rupees, and he would, before he went, he would put the money in a trust fund for his wife and children in case he didn't come back and like that. And, you know, the Punjabi said, you know, he would maybe buy some things for his family, a television set and this and that. So they came to a Marwari and asked him what he would do. And he said that he wanted 15,000 rupees. He said he would put 5,000 rupees in a trust fund for his family. He would spend, you know, 3,000 rupees on a television and 2,000 rupees on this and that. And he said he would pay 5,000 rupees and tell the Gujarati to go. So that's called lazy intelligence, using your intelligence. And so actually, Krishna, he's the supreme lazy intelligent, because he doesn't do anything, but everything is done by him through his multifarious energies. So for him, even if he has a material body, it's his energy. And he can convert material into spiritual or spiritual. For him, there's no difference. Deha dehi vibhago yam neshvare vidyate kvachit. For God, there's no difference between his soul and his body. For us, there's the difference. My soul is asat achit nirananda. It's temporary, full of ignorance, and full of suffering. But my soul is Satchidananda. There's a difference. My body is dead. Even now, my body is dead. I'm moving it, but I'm moving the stick also. The stick is dead, my body is dead. My soul is alive, and my soul will never die. Never was there a time when you did not exist. nor I, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Krishna tells Arjuna, natvevaham jatu nasham, natvam neme janadipo. So, here Krishna is described as asnaviram, without veins. Again, why should the Ishopanishad describe God as having a body without veins? It's simply saying that his body is a different kind of body. They may say, it may say that he has no hands, no legs, but to say he has no veins, that's actually saying something more. It's saying he has a body, but no veins. Just like veins, they're very, you know, ugly. And they give you a lot of trouble oftentimes when they become varicose veins. But Krishna's body is not that kind of machine. This material body that we have is very much like an efficient machine that lasts for a certain time. Yantra Rudani Mayaya. It's made of Maya, material energy, and it's yantra, machine. But Krishna's body is not so machine-like. But it's a beautiful, transcendental body. And we can enjoy with Krishna. We also have a spiritual body. The soul also is or has a spiritual body which is undeveloped. Just like a child, when he first comes into the womb, the child is in a pea-like form, just like a small pea. When the semen and the ovum emulsify, it becomes a small pea. So within that pea form, there's a full body, but it just hasn't developed yet. And similarly, the soul in material consciousness has a spiritual body, but it's undeveloped. It's simply waiting to develop by the watering process of chanting the holy names and engaging in bhakti yoga. So, I'm going to end today. I've gone over my time again a little bit. Sorry for that. Tomorrow we'll do verse 9 through 14. And now we'll have our questions and answer session. Ma Sringa Prabhu, would you like to be one of the judges? People will ask questions. You have to get their name. You have paper? Oh, and Ma Mantra's here. Oh, I didn't see you. We have two judges or three? Two is enough, huh? Chalega. So we're going to pass the microphone around. You can ask questions. Please mention your name and your question. First prize is an Ishopanishad. Trivikram, do you have laminations? Okay, one gentleman last night, he didn't get his lamination, so I want to present that to him. Is he here today? Who was our first prize winner? Okay. We'll present that to you later. Maybe you'll win two laminations, I don't know. Yes. What is your name, please? Padmanabhan. So his question is that we are a bundle of good and evil, and it seems like this mechanistic chanting of Maha Mantra is too simplistic to actually give us liberation. As I explained yesterday, there are different ages, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali Yuga, cycle of time. And in each age, there is a different method for self-realization which has been given by God. As I mentioned today, dharma cannot be invented or concocted. It is coming down from the Supreme, dharmam tu sakshat, bhagavat pranitam. Kriteyad dhyayato vishnum tretayam yajato makai dvaparo parichayadyam kalo tadhari kirtanat. In the Shastra it is stated that in Satyuga dhyan was required. But at that time people lived for 100,000 years. They had great longevity. They had great dedication, strength. And they could practice rigid austerities. In Kali Yuga it's not possible. Treta Yuga, Yajna, Havan, but in Kali Yuga, you don't get pure Dalda, what to speak of pure Ghee. And for performing Yajna, you require so many pure substances. Kali Yuga is just, you know, an ocean of bad qualities. What can I say? Yajna is not, you just get smoke in your face. You won't get any result from your yajna, you'll just get smoke in your face. That's the opinion. It's not my opinion, actually. The sages at Naimisharanya, they got the same opinion. They tried to perform a yajna and they saw it was useless. It can't be done in Kali Yuga properly. And Dwapara Yuga was temple worship. But in Kali Yuga, people just don't have the determination, the strength, the willpower to attend the temple and follow all the rules and regulations every day. There's so many rules and regulations for temple worship. And it has to be done very opulently with gold and silver and jewels. In Kali Yuga, men put the gold and silver and jewels on their wives and they put glass on the deities. But actually all that gold and silver is meant for Krishna. It's meant for God. So in Kali Yuga, the only method is kirtan. Now, saying that it is too simplistic is not correct, because in our lives there are many things which are very simple. In fact, in literature, in English literature, there is a saying that something said succinctly is something said profoundly. The most profound statements are those which are, you know, 25 words or less, or are said very, very succinctly. Another example is, my favorite example is a computer. Everybody knows how a computer can perform many wonderful tasks. It can solve big, big mathematical problems. But you'd be surprised, those of you who have any knowledge of computers, the principle of a computer's working is based upon electricity passing through a gate. Just like you have cars going through a gateway of a city. So on an electric circuit, there's a kind of gate. And sometimes the gate is open, and sometimes the gate is closed. So the electricity goes through, and sometimes the gate is blocked and it doesn't go through. So every time it goes through, the computer registers, kind of in its mind, a one. And when it doesn't go through, it registers a zero. And then different combinations of gates called binary, this is called the system of binary numbers, one and zero. So you can get different combinations. You can have 1, 0, 1. You can have 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0. Actually there's eight binary numbers called a bit. Anyway, bits and bytes. But the principle is very simple. But that same simple principle can be used to solve big, big problems. So if in our material life such a principle is there, then spiritually also. And then the other thing is that the potency of the holy name can only be appreciated by someone who has tasted it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't write any books, but he left 8 verses called Sikshastakam. And in his second verse, he says, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktish. That my dear Lord, you are so kind that you have invested all your energy in your holy name. Binatvam Nama Namino. There's no difference between chanting God's name and personally associating with them. That is the potency of the holy name. Any other questions? What is your name, Mataji? No, name. Naam bataye. Allah. Huh? What is, how do you... Okay. After death, what happens? Birth. Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur dhruvam janma mritasya cha. Actually, this idea of transmigration of the soul is going on even in this lifetime. A few years ago, just a few short years ago, you were a little baby. Where is that body now? It's died. Your baby body has died. And a few years after that, you had a debutante's body. But that body is also gone. So in this lifetime, you're dying and being born again. In fact, every 8 years, deino sminyatha dehe komaram yovanam jara. We're passing through so many bodies even in this lifetime. One, just like a snake literally, you can see it. He sheds his old body, his old skin, and grows a new body. The same thing is happening to us, although we can't see it so clearly. So birth and death are going on perpetually. The final death is when you drop this body altogether. But yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram. After giving up this body, you're transferred to a new body according to your thoughts at the time of death. If you're thinking of Krishna, then you get a spiritual body and live with Krishna. If you're thinking of Maya, then you'll come back again to this material world, and there's no guarantee what kind of body you will get. You may get an animal body, you may get a demigod body, it depends on your karma and your thoughts. Two things, what you deserve and what you desire. Gujarati Nati, Krishnamurti, Pratyaksha. Yes, induction. Yeah. Basically, of course, parampara is based upon one's faith. Adau Shraddha. In the beginning, there's faith, and we can't get away from that. But, as I've said many times, it is not blind faith, but it's based upon analysis, it's based upon reason, it's based upon intelligent faith. For example, I may want to watch the television tomorrow night. I may want to watch the Grammy Awards. I don't, but at least I know that if I want to watch it, the television program has stated that it's at 10:30 tomorrow night on television. So if I accept the authority of the television brochure, the television program, then I can adjust my schedule. If I want to speculate, well, maybe it actually comes at 9:30. Or I've seen in the past, last year it was at 10:45. So in that way, I may miss 15 minutes if I try to use my own intelligence. But if I just accept the version of the television program, because I know where it came from, it was issued by the government. And the government never makes false statements, right? So, or a better example, of course, would be, again, who is my father? Now, I could speculate. I could start studying my genes, and I could start looking around for a person with the same genes as I have, or I could try to look and find someone who has blue eyes and brown hair, and, you know, looks like me. So many ways I could choose to try to find out who is my father. But if I just accept the authority of my mother, then I save a lot of time. So generally speaking, when you want to understand spiritual subject matters, which are admittedly difficult for you to ascertain through your senses, the truth of spiritual subject, the spiritual subject is above the modes of nature. So it's beyond the limits of our senses. We've been discussing how wonderful Krishna's qualities are and how contradictory they seem. So it's just better if I want to save time. If you do your own research, maybe someday after many, many lifetimes, bahunam janmanamante, gyanavan, You'll become Gyanavan. But according to the Shastra, you'll come to the same conclusion. Mam prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti. That there's nothing more than Vasudev Krishna. And the Shastras and the Acharyas are simply making it easy for you so you don't waste time. Why waste many, many lifetimes? You'll come to the same conclusion. Name? I'm not exactly sure what your question is, but the living being has all the qualities of God in minute quantity. He has 80% actually. 80% of the qualities of God. Because he is just like a tiny sample of God. Or just like sparks of the fire. Are equal to the fire in quality but not in quantity. There's light and heat in the spark and there's light and heat in the fire. The quantity is different. So in that way, the eternal qualities of the Lord are present in the Jivatma. 80% of those qualities, but in minute quantity. So, we are never, at any stage of our existence, equal to God. Our relationship with Him is that, is one of...